Well, we are here in a day that's been coming since the beginning of time and excited to be here by virtue of relationships and hard work of Dr. Sharita. We have the benefit of the presence of Mama One Africa, and we're going to talk about some issues today that have been on the minds and contemplations of a number of citizens of what we call these United States, and that is living abroad in other areas. I was just confronted by my wife moments before, after telling her the title of this show, about the fact that we owe this place nothing, and that it is our duty to look at alternatives, and that no place is going to be perfect, and we have got to stop holding up the veil of American exceptionalism, quote unquote, to these places that we contemplate. And in the green room, as we like to state, we had a conversation with Mother Africa, and she said something that was fascinating that I hope we get into. And that is, she doesn't have a problem living under a governmental form that's known by us in the West as a dictatorship, because all dictatorships are not bad to extent. So I, with no further ado, I think it is best, because based on the energy that I've felt from Mother One Africa, I don't think I could replicate her energy in giving you some of her background, because it was kindred, of course, but it's a beautiful energy that I will no longer deprive you all of enjoying. With no further ado, Mother Africa, if you could just tell us a little bit about your background, and we're going to talk the topic today, if we have one, is about establishing areas that would be fundamental fair places or decent places to establish expatriate communities. Mother One Africa, please.
Thanks. Well, first and foremost, I give all honor, praise, and glory to our Mother, Father, Creator, whose shoulders I stand upon, whose backs we lean upon, and whose shoulders have held us up until this day. And, my escape, and I call it an escape, getting the hell out of America, and especially with the negative connotation that has been given to us over the years about Africa. It did not make you want to go there. And so I traveled around a lot before I got to Ghana. And when I got to Africa, I must say I was really pissed off because I, like so many of us living in America, KKKA, believe the hype that they told us. They told us about Tarzan and Jane and dirty little African kids. Well, if you played in the dirt, you'd be dirty. Okay. White folks would come in and find the worst village in the world and take pictures and talk about, I've been to Africa. So when I first went to Africa, I traveled throughout South America looking for Black people, but not quite going to Africa. And then when I had the opportunity, my king man said, listen, you've been trying to get to Africa because my dear friend died before, and we had made a couple of attempts, but at that time, in 80, 85, we tried to go to Egypt. Nobody wanted to go. And when you talked about Africa, if you weren't going to the Caribbean or you weren't going to Europe, most people didn't want to hear about Africa. So before we could get to Africa together, my very dear friend died. And so when I had the opportunity, some crazy guy walked in and told me, I'm an African chief. I said, yeah, my name is Pocahontas. Now, what the hell do you want? Okay. It's one of those days where the air conditioner wasn't working. The Italians came in demanding $100 for taking away my garbage. I took my garbage home because it was just that little, because we had a travel agency. And this guy came in talking about, he was an African chief. I said, now that's just what I need. And here I got young boys out there selling drugs and chasing away my customers. So I said, you know, brother, just leave your papers and I'll get back to you. And sure enough, come to find out, he was going to be made a chief. And so my husband said, look, why don't you go and check it out? So I did in 1987. And I want you to know, I was really pissed off when I got there. I was pissed off at the media, pissed off at people, us who were afraid to go to Africa because we believed the hype. So I spent 3 weeks in Africa, in Ghana. But when I left, I knew after coming out of those castle dungeons that one, I would never be the same person again. And two, America was going to be a memory. And so I hold on to the spirit of my ancestors because ancestors have really shown me. It's just like my place in Ghana. I have a beautiful place in Ghana. And no man, no chief gave me that. When I stood on that land on the ocean between two edifices, the Cape Coast Castle Dungeons to the east, the Elmina Castle Dungeons to the west, and I asked the ancestors, and that was my first time in Africa, if you give me this, I will be an obedient servant. I will do anything that you tell me. And what they told me was, I need to help the children of Africa to come back home. And so my husband, when I went back, my king man, he didn't think I'd fallen out of my treehouse. Everybody else thought I'd lost my mind because I wanted to live in Africa. And I said to him, you know, we talked, but we couldn't talk because he hadn't seen what I saw. So I said, well, I'll tell you what, I'm gonna give you a ticket because we were in the travel business. I'm gonna give you a ticket for your birthday. I want you to go to Ghana. And then when you come back, we can sit down and talk about it. Right now, I'm here and you're here. Better that we're on the same page. He went and spent 1 month in Africa. And when he came home, he was like, give me that pencil and paper so I can figure out how we can get the hell out of here. So sure enough, we went to Ghana together in 88 and 89. And in 89, he came in one day and he said, you know, these people want to make me a chief. And I was like, yeah, right, chief. I don't know what do you know about being a chief? He's like, well, listen, you're a supervisor, you're a chief, you're in charge. So they made him a chief. And unfortunately, I never saw him made a chief. I just said, look, take pictures, because they said, they're gonna make him a chief in 3 weeks. Now we had a car service, two cars, two drivers, me and him. Okay. So I said, you know, take pictures. I'm going back. So we decided when he came back that we were going to move. And so less than a year later, we had packed up and we moved to Ghana. So when we get to Ghana, when you're a chief, according to our custom and tradition, you have to go to your village and let your people know that you're home. So we went to the village. I knew everybody in that village because I met him in 1987. They didn't know he was my husband and vice versa. Then he said, let me take you to the land that they gave me when they made me a chief. And it was the same land exactly with three coconut trees. That's all that was on there. It's the same land that I stood on in 1987 and asked the ancestors for, and they gave it to me. So I definitely had to be an obedient servant. You don't want a whooping from an ancestor, not at all. Okay. And so I've spent the last 30 years living in Ghana at One Africa, which we developed from scratch. And the thing was to not just tell people about it, but to show people that it was possible for us to do that and that we had the right to do it. So we built One Africa. We literally built it because the person that was our Google friend, when people are that friendly with you, be careful. Okay. So our Google friend stole our $16,500 and left us with a house that had no windows, no doors, no ceiling, no floors, no running water inside, no flushing toilet. And we moved into that house. You know, the choice was, well, what are we going to do, baby? I said, one thing is we ain't going to do. We ain't going back to America, KKKR. Okay. We escaped. Okay. And because my husband had been held up, some Spanish-speaking people held him up at gunpoint, tied him up, threw him in the trunk of one of our cars, and left him. They finally dumped him and told him that if he moved, they would come back and kill him. I didn't know that at the time. And I overheard him talking to some of the brothers. And I was like, what? We out of here. We going. So Africa, and I've been to quite a few African countries. The thing is that Africa is for us. And getting people, you know, just talking about it was one thing. But, you know, as African people, we're show me people, okay? Can't just talk about it. You got to show us. And so we were able to show people the possibilities. We had people like Professor Smalls, Professor Jeffries. He'd be telling people, yeah, I got these people out of New York City. Now they're living in the bush, because we did live in the bush. And you know, we didn't have receptions. We didn't have no electricity. We had candlelight. We didn't have no flushing toilet. We had slop jars, you know, like in the South, you know, you have a potty. And it worked. So we have a beautiful 15-room place in Elmina on the ocean front. And the work we've done, the ancestors have been with us 100%. I was just telling a brother that I had a visit today from a university student out of Houston, Texas, who had been at my place in 2015. And I met her today. Okay, well, I'd met her maybe about a month ago. And we got to talking, we spent the day together. And when they got back to my house, we called the professor who brought those students to me in 2015. You know, it's like a complete circle. That's why I said, you know, I treat people the way I want to be treated. So it's like, I'm coming into your house. I want you to be sorry to see me leave and not damn glad I'm going. Okay, so.
Mother Africa, let me ask you, Mother One Africa, let me ask you one question before I turn this over to everyone, because this is just fascinating. And this is going to be based in part on your comment to Brother Ra, when you offered a antidote to an upset stomach that, you know, I'm not sure if this is something that you would have offered when you lived in New York or not, or if this is something that you have come into contact with since you have been in the motherland. But I want to ask, and this question is really based in part. I'm not sure if you are familiar with. There's a movie that really is once again another one of those level set moments in the United States called Sinners. And one thing that is done in this movie Sinners, and the title may be slightly misleading, is there is a connection to what we would characterize as voodoo in the United States. But these are things that we abandoned once we got to these shores. So, and you speak of the anger that you had, the miseducation that you had been given when you touched the shores of Africa. What sort of practices that did you notice that we abandoned, but epigenetically we still have some gravity towards? And because you touched upon it earlier, just in your everyday, it looks like your everyday familiar when you talked about the antidote to certain ailments that we may have in this enterprise.
Well, in our household, for a lot of years before I got to Africa, there were certain practices, because you lived with your grandmother, and things that they used to do in the South. We kind of held on to those. And some of our grandparents had that connection to Africa, though they'd never been to Africa, but they didn't discourage you from wanting to go to Africa, So, you had a toothache, then you used cloves, you didn't take medicine, different things that we did that when I got to Africa, there were those similarities. It's just like, if you read the contraindications on medicine, in your right mind, you're not going to take that. Because if you tell me that one of my ears is going to drop off, I'm going to go blind in one eye and can't see out the other, I'm not taking that. I'm going to look for an alternative. And things that, when we're at home, things work. It's like, for example, if I get malaria, I take pineapple skins and I boil them and I drink them. Here we throw pineapple skins. In America, you throw pineapple skins in the garbage. Okay. In terms of, just your overall health, then we follow those. And when you get to Africa, I tell you one thing, they have more pharmacies in Africa than any place I've ever seen in my life, whether it be Ghana, whether it be Rwanda, plenty. But if you listen to the elders will tell you what to do, and it works. I've had malaria a few times. And one of the things, we're scared to go to Africa because you get malaria and everybody knows that malaria will kill you. Well, what kills you with with malaria is untreated malaria. Okay. And then how do you treat it? You treat it with herbs as opposed to taking medication. It's like going to Africa. They said that I needed to take chloroquine. But when I found out that I'd be blind if I took chloroquine as often as they said I needed it, I wouldn't be able to see. So what do you do? You do those things to keep the mosquitoes from biting you so that you don't get malaria. Okay. So. It's custom and tradition. And old customs and traditions work well if we allow them. And so people shouldn't be afraid. Now, I guess people call me a pioneer because there are so many people that folks say I've inspired to come to Africa. It's like, don't be afraid. If you ain't afraid of white folk, you child, I'm less afraid of African people than I am of white folks. All right. Now, I had some brothers, big black men in black suits carrying AK-47s, and they told me how terrible Africa was. I was like, oh God, please don't kill me. Okay, because I thought I was going to die. All they wanted to know was where were we going? So now, how am I going to be more afraid of two black men, but I ain't afraid of white folks carrying guns in America? So, just there's a whole lot of stuff. But the best move that I've ever made in my life was to move to Africa. So I've been in Africa for a total of 37 years. And I must say that it is not without great sacrifice. I've had to sacrifice my family, my children, my grandchildren. I have 20 great-grandchildren, most of whom I've only seen maybe twice, three times over the years. And it's been a sacrifice. I mean, it took my daughter 25 years before she came to visit me. And it took my son 19 years before he came. And some of the others to this day have never been to see me in Africa. But I have a very, very large extended family. And so those are some of the sacrifices. The ancestors assured me that if I was an obedient servant, that they would see that I was taken care of, like Dr. Sherita, one of my daughters. So I have a lot of daughters and a lot of sons and a lot of grandchildren. But I went from no citizenship, which I worked from 1993 when I first wrote my first letter to the president of the country about citizenship for us. Because if you call me kith and kin, then what does that mean? You can't treat me like you treat white folks. Okay. In fact, you treat white folks better than you treat us. But I worked on citizenship with a group of other people. It wasn't me alone. And I finally got my citizenship in 2016. 38 of us got citizenship by the outgoing president, Mahama, who is now the president again. And then a couple of years later, we were able to get citizenship for 120 of us. And then a couple of years after that, we got another 120 people citizenship. And I was so happy. December of last year, 524 diasporan Africans got citizenship in Ghana. And I was real happy, okay, because I was part of making that happen.
That is,
So.
yeah, that is absolutely awesome. Want to turn I mean, we could stay there all day, but I think we'd like to engage some others with you right now. Mike Jones, with no further ado, I mean, you've already been introduced to Mother One Africa. What crosses your mind at this point?
I kind of got, first of all, thank you for the stories of the narrative about your journey over the last 30 years, and 30 years is a real arc. So you're not a tourist in Africa or in Ghana or Rwanda. This is home. So my question kind of is, first question would be, given, one of the things we do over here is we talk about Africa as if it's one place, and it's a multitude of places on a continent. So fundamentally, of the places that are available to repatriate to, which ones would, if you were a Black American, a Black, a descendant of the African diaspora in the United States, I'll frame it like that. Which countries would be most, I don't want to say suitable, but most open and wishing for your return because of what you could bring to the country relative to their development needs and your skill sets, background, or whatever?
Well, the first thing I tell people that say that they want to come to Africa is that one, we have to do diligence, we have to do research. And anybody in their right mind is not going to go to a country that's at war. So we look at what the country has, what we can bring, and the stability of the country. Ghana is still very stable, okay, very corrupt. There are a lot of us that go to Ghana, and there's an expression that says, visit me, come live with me. It's two different things. And I guess you could call us kind of diehards, just determined to make sure that stuff works for us. But you have 54, 55 countries to choose from. So between Ghana, Togo, Benin, you got to have a thick skin going to Nigeria, but Nigeria is another country. We're talking West Africa, then there's East Africa. You've got Tanzania, but you need to know what the laws of that country, what the laws are. Okay. Now, I've lived all those years in West Africa and the past 6 years in East Africa. There are definitely differences. And as I said to the brother earlier, I don't have a problem living under a dictator that takes care of his people, that cares about his country, that has opportunities. That and things that we can be involved in. For me, Rwanda was a go-to. One, because of the political climate. Two, because of sanitation. Three, because 50% or more than 50% of the government are female. The country is clean to the point that you could eat off the street. I don't see plastic bags. I mean, I lived on the ocean and I could sit on my porch and watch plastic bags coming in on the waves. Filth. I say Ghana's a throw-down society. Garbage. You just throw it down. Okay. So, after, for example, I'd have to clean my beach every single day, every day, because the filth coming out of the ocean, people think it's a garbage can. It's like I said to a brother one day, oh, I thought he had a bag in the car. I said, can you throw this away? And he did. He opened the window and he threw it out the window. I said, well, damn, I could have did that. Okay. But it's what I call a throw-down society. We're dealing with plastic bags that clog up the system. We're looking at lights off. We're looking at no water. Just a whole lot of things. Okay. So Rwanda for me was a better alternative. Now we lived under a dictator. They used to call President Rollins. Rollins was a dictator, but things worked. That was the difference. So you've got about, and now we have Burkina Faso, and the brother Ibrahim Traoré. The brother is amazing. I wish I was younger. I'd try to marry him. Okay. He's an amazing young man. And you know, if you'll notice, with all of the activity that was going on, not just around the country, but around the world in supporting this young man, because he is doing for his country and his people what African leaders should be doing.
You
But
know,
if you
yesterday in Times Square, there was a movement in support of him in Times Square yesterday.
Exactly. There was support of him in the Caribbean. Even white folks in Europe were supporting him.
That's correct.
Everyone, you know, but listen to the silence from African leaders. The silence is so loud. Those guys had nothing to say about what this young man is doing for his country. He put the French out, he put America out, and his position is that, look, I'll do business with anybody. However, it has to be fair and equitable. Why do you get 90% of our resources? You give us 5 or 10% and then talk about how poor we are. He said, no, we ain't doing that no more. So they've only tried to kill him 19 times.
This week, more than likely. This
Right. Because
week.
he reminded me of Harriet Tubman. What Harriet Tubman said, 19 times I went back south to save sisters and brothers. 19 times I went back south, and she could have saved others, except they didn't know that they were slaves. Okay? They didn't know that they were slaves. And just like leaders in Africa, many of them, they are rich to a fault. So now we have four different countries. We've got Niger, we've got Mali, we've got Burkina Faso, and possibly Chad, and others that are joining. I can't be mad at them. Listen, I am so happy and so proud of what this young man is doing. And I'm gonna save my pennies because I will be in Burkina Faso in October when they give citizenship to our brothers and sisters. But we have to come wanting to bring something tangible to the country. You know, just like Garvey said, we don't want everybody to come. Some of y'all need to stay right where you are. You don't need to come to Africa and bring that garbage with you. Keep that garbage over, okay?
Could I ask you
Absolutely.
a follow-up question
Amen to that.
based off what you just said? Since all of us couldn't, can't, or shouldn't go back, what ought to be our relationship if you're in the United States? What should be our relationship psychologically, emotionally, politically, with countries in the continent? And just as an analogy, I think about the American Jewish community in Israel. Everybody's not going back to Israel, but they have a connection and a support. So what would that look like for us? Because I think what it means is we have to stop being American and at least at a minimum come up with a dual identity, one for here, but also extend it to the continent.
But see, you left out something very important. The thing that the Jews have that we don't have and we don't do, we're talking about financial. And financial doesn't mean that you got to be filthy rich, but you have to do something. So many of us come into Africa with the attitude, well, y'all sold us into slavery, you owe us. Africa don't owe us nothing. Really, we need to be able to help. All right. You know, I hear people come and talk about, oh, you know, they sold us into slavery. I said, but it wasn't all of Africa. You know, it wasn't every Ghanaian that sold you into slavery. And what do you bring to the table? If we're bringing, you know, you pissed off at them, we were enslaved in Africa. And the other thing, too, is the lack of knowledge of each other. Okay. We were slaves in America. I mean, we fought like hell and we continue to fight to be in a place that really don't give a damn about us. Now we got this lunatic. Can I say that?
Yes, but of course you can, right? I second that emotion.
Yeah, but so the thing is that we have to be able to bring something to the table. Africans look at us like a dollar bill with legs. What they know about us, you know, we'll travel, we go on tours, we spend a lot of money. They don't understand that a lot of that money that they think we have is credit card debt. Okay. We're like ships in the night. We're coming finally, and they're going. Okay. So we have to be able to bring something tangible to the table. All right. My thing had been, let us try to connect each other. Like I have an educational sponsorship program. Now we see these programs on TV where they show you the starving children and all the rest of that. So a lot of us think that that's all of Africa, but it's not. And my thing was, let us connect brothers and sisters from this side to that side. If you wanted to sponsor a child in my program, one of the agreements was that you had to visit Ghana. You had to make a connection with the family. And we made sure that pictures that you received from us were pictures that looking like this, okay, clear, so that you know who it is, not some fuzzy picture, you know, this is little Johnny. And you know, send me $21 a month. And I'm. So we have to make a commitment also to Africa. We're in a better position in many instances that we can help. So, what's happening like now in Ghana? A lot of people are coming doing business that provides jobs. I think Ghanaians, for that fact, a lot of Africans, they're magicians, that they're able to do what they do with the kind of money that we receive. And then we get over here and you don't want to pay them well. It's like someone told me, said, oh, I can't, why you pay them all that? That's not the way the minimum, I said, I don't care what the damn minimum wage is. Is as far as I'm concerned, it's not a livable wage. And they are magicians that they're able to make things happen that they do. I mean, how do you pay somebody? Here we do francs. So 100,000 francs, let's see, 200,000 francs is a hundred and $38. That's no money. But you want to pay somebody less than that for a month. Why? Because that's what they pay. And if you pay more, and this is our people talking, if you pay more, then you upset the structure. Damn the structure. Okay. It's called a living wage. So we have that white folks mentality too often when we go to Africa.
And those are the people that Marcus Garvey did not want to see you, at least that mindset.
Exactly.
And
He said, stay over there.
that mindset. In addition to that, I think we've, can do a much better job of creating what he wanted, because it was twofold. Number one, I'm glad you raised that. Marcus Garvey wanted to see Little Africa inside of New York, just like Little Italy, and creating that sort of trade rate. But we have, once again, you talk about the education that we're lacking. Dr. Alexander, I want to open the floor up to you, and then we're going to go to Mr. Jerry L.T. Christmas, and so you both can engage with Mother One Africa.
Thank you, Attorney Fields, and thank you again, Mother One. On the points of sacrifice and diligence, and even the piece that you were just speaking on with regard to knowledge, what must one know about self before and during the process of repatriation?
Well, my daddy used to tell me that if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere in the world. Okay. I am definitely a diehard New Yorker. If you can make it in Detroit, you can make it anywhere in the world. Okay. You have to know yourself and what you're capable of doing. I mean, you don't want to go someplace to be a burden. You know, the thing is that too many people feel like, well, Africa owes us. Tell me, what does Africa owe us? Okay. If you are in a position to be able to help, then you should. I mean, a lot of people are not able. I mean, they're living from paycheck to paycheck. They're barely making it. So we're not expecting those people to be able to help out in Africa. But there are enough of us living in America that can help in Africa. When you're spending $1,000 to get your hair done, $300 to get your fingernails done, then you're one of those people in a position, whether you're an educator, that can squeeze out something. And just like the Jews, the reason the Jews can do what they do, they get a lot of support from America, okay, and other countries. The Chinese show up, they set up Chinatown. The Italians show up, they set up Italian town. We're all over the place. We're very individualistic. It's like when you get married, you go to your place, and my parents stay over there. And if they get too old, they'll put them in a nursing home. Okay. So you have to know yourself. The thing is that my mantra for years, as far back as I can remember, is that I treat people the way I want to be treated. And where I can help, I do. And so we as African people here in America, we have to be able to come together, really come together as a unit. Just like I say, you have your program here, you have your community education network. How much could each one of you or people from your organization be able to contribute something every month to be able to help out an organization in Africa? Nobody is saying that you got to give thousands and thousands of dollars, but you give what you can, but you're doing something. And Africa, yeah, is Africa a jungle? Depends on where you go. But we have beautiful cities, people, that we can help. We may never get to Africa. We may never want to go to Africa, but you're still an African. People ask me, said, well, are you an African-American? No, I'm not an African-American. Is African-American an ethnic group? No, I'm an African. First and foremost, I am an African. I was born in America, but I'm first and foremost an African. I ain't colored. I ain't black. I mean, we've been everything. We've been niggers. We've been coons. We've been black. I mean, my great grandson, we tried to tell him, his mother tried to tell him that he was black. He said, I'm not black. You're not black. You brown. Okay. What color is your daddy? He's beige. And what color are you? He said, I'm copper. Black. Black is not an ethnic group.
Exactly.
You know? So those are some of the things that we can do. There are organizations that could use our help. Like here in Rwanda, I have a project to economically empower women who are survivors of the 1994 genocide, to teach them a skill that makes them marketable so that they can run their own business. And when you ask them, that's the other thing that I love about Rwanda, is how do you forgive people that took your family's lives, those that survived? And an elder told me that until you have forgiveness, you cannot move forward. And that's so true. So our objective is to train 100 women in a skill that makes them marketable so that they themselves can be entrepreneurial and not dependent on a system. So those kind of things we can contribute to, okay? And then we are part of the solution and not part of the problem.
So what you're saying is if a chicken is raised on a chicken coop, I mean, if an eagle is raised in a chicken coop, it's still an eagle, huh?
He's still an eagle. It don't make him a chicken.
Doesn't make him a chicken.
Yeah. Not at all.
Dr. Christmas, I see you've been patiently waiting. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm before Kwame today. Born
okay.
On Saturday.
Okay, Kwame. Before I get to that, Kwame, and thank you for that correction, Kwame. Kwabena has stated from the boogie down, but we are African, period. And I would put a like on that one for sure. Kwame, please go ahead.
I love that we are African, period. And Mother Africa, I love your energy and everything that you are saying. I was in Ghana last year. I've been to Ghana before, earlier. It took me 20 years to get back again before I was there last year. And I've also been to Egypt. And so I see the need for us in Africa. If you could help and talk about, you know, some of the organizations and entities that we should be supporting in Africa and how we can bring leadership together, leadership in America, Black leaders, African leadership in America, let me say African leadership together with African leadership in Africa, because I think that is what's missing. We have such a disconnect, and I know we have such a disconnect because of the distance. When I fly to Ghana, I think about, you know, just how long that flight is, that 15-hour flight. That alone makes it difficult for a lot of people to get to Africa. And I have so many friends that visit every place else before they go to Africa. They've been everywhere, all over the world, and Africa's the last place that they come to. So if you could just explain how we can better help individuals and organizations over there, that would be beneficial to me, because I really want to get a place. I'm looking right now for an Airbnb in Ghana, in Accra.
Let me say this. You are the leadership. I don't trust. There's not a national individual that I trust more than you. So you're the leadership that needs to get involved right now. I'm
Can I
sorry,
say
Mother.
something also
Yes,
before
sir.
she answers that?
Yes.
We're doing it right now, and this is a method of getting leaders together. This is what we're doing. We're communicating, we're networking, and this is just one method before she answers. Okay, thank you.
All
But I
right.
mean, that's very, very important, is our networking. Okay. And you've been to, when you were in Ghana, did you look around to see what organizations that you could possibly become a part of?
I didn't get an opportunity to do that because I was, you more on the tourist route, and I was with a group of young people, a group of kids that we were taking to expose them to Africa.
Well, in exposing
Now, I
them
have
to Africa,
individuals. I will say this. I do have individuals that I've been supporting. I have a brother over there that I've been supporting for the last 20 years.
okay. And what does he do?
He's been doing a little bit of everything. He started off, he was a young, when we first met him in Africa, and it was my mom that first met him in Africa when he was a little boy. He was probably about 8 years old, and she
Okay.
supported him all the way through, helped pay for him to go to school, helped him get a house. Subsequently, he's gotten married. He has a wife and children now. My mother has passed on, but he still maintains contact with me as a
Right.
brother. And I will from time to time, I will send him money. As a matter of fact, I was thinking the other day that I was going to send him some money when I was coming into the house yesterday.
Well, I mean, that's one way. I mean, there are organizations like AAAG, you have the African American Association of Ghana, you have the Caribbean Association of Ghana. You have numerous organizations that you can connect with that can tell you where help is needed, okay? We have to look for it and not look at us as tourists, okay? Like I said, visit me, come live with me is two different things. The picture that you see on a visit, we leave and you don't know nothing about the people, okay? It's just like one of the problems that we have is that we'll show up, we go to Ghana now. Would you give a cab driver in California, New York, or Chicago $5,000 to find you some land?
No,
No.
We do that. You
Right.
understand? I can't get milk in New York, but I go to Ghana. I'm just so happy to be here. And I met this young man, and he's just so nice. And then you want to know why he's taking your money.
Right.
I'm not, well, the thing is, we have to think. And I would get African Americans that would say, I didn't come to Africa to be bothered with no African Americans. Excuse me, you need to talk to those who have been here so that you know what the ground rules are like. But we come in with that attitude. Like the woman said, she didn't come, I didn't come here to be bothered with no African Americans. I said, and do me a favor. When you get ripped off, don't come to be bothered with no African Americans. Okay. That's that whole mindset that we have. We
Right.
should be looking at people who are there doing what we're coming to do. Because you don't know everything. So, I mean, I'm not the world's expert, but I have managed to live there for more than 30 years. Okay. And I wasn't rich. Okay. My husband was a retired New York City firefighter. and we made it work. Why? I didn't have a television. I didn't have a television. One, I didn't have no electricity. And when I did get electricity, I didn't have a television. Couldn't afford a TV at that time. So we found something else to make us happy. Okay. What we have, I mean, I'm amazed. I used to go to people's house and say, great big TVs. I think I'm in the movies. Big screen TVs. You know, y'all ain't got no money, but you got big screen TVs. You got a whole lot of stuff that you really don't need. So you make a sacrifice and help those that are in need and look for people who are doing what you're coming to do. That's the best advice that I can give anybody that wants to come. And there are people that have come, they've had terrible experiences, so they've gone back or they've gone to another country. We need to know what the laws are. Because, you know, in America, you can say anything you want to say, and everybody gonna say nothing. In Africa, you can't do that. You can't call the president an MF and oh no, Nope. And like here, people all over the world got together in protest against what they're trying to do to Ibrahim Traoré. They told us, I said, well, can we gather? And we were told no. Okay. We did, but some of us did get together privately, okay, and stood for him. But a public display? And one of the reasons, Rwanda is in close proximity to the Congo. And so you had to be careful. I mean, so that it's not perceived that you're organizing against Congo, you know. They're having their issues. And Donald, what's his name? The president. He wants to go in and help the Congo. He doesn't want to help the Congo.
Wants
He
those
wants
resources.
the resources,
He wants that.
okay?
Yeah. You
And
know,
unfortunately,
and along those lines, if you notice, they have decided and they've entered into an agreement to put a soft colonization agreement in place with the Ukraine in lieu of the military funding that they have. So they're extracting the resources from the Ukraine now based on this. Which is the exact same thing they have been doing and want to do for Congo. A great book on that is The Case for Congo. There's a great book on that gets into it pretty deeply, Mother One Africa.
That
Mother
the
Africa,
book.
have you visited the Congo?
No, I did cross the border. I wandered across the border and I wandered back to the other side. But no, I have not. That's what I mean about going into a country that is having conflict. Listen, I hear enough about what goes on in the Congo. I see enough of what goes on there. I didn't lose nothing in the Congo. Okay. I know that they at war. All right. And they'll see me like they see any other black person or African. I ain't trying to get shot, killed, whatever. No. So I don't go to countries that are having conflicts. Heidi, you cut your hair? Looking good.
Yeah, 30.
Okay. Yeah. So the thing is that whatever country it is that you're deciding that you want to go to, you need to do your due diligence. You need to get as much information about that country. What are things that you can and cannot do? How do you dress? You know, I look at some of the sisters that would come there with their booty shorts on and That's not the culture, okay? And you feel like, well, listen, I'm from America. I could do what I damn well please. No, then you need to keep your behind over there, okay? Because it shows a disrespect for the culture that you're in. You know, and Africans for a lot, they mimic us. You know, this thing with the pants halfway down your butt, if the police was chasing you, they'd catch you. Because how do you run with your pants down around your knees? And when I tell people that here, and they're not as bad as they used to be. And when I explain to them what that style means, you want to see brothers pulling pants up fast. Okay.
I think that's a good point you bring up about how they mimic us. You know, I noticed that even more the second time last year when I was in Ghana, how much they mimic us. And it made me feel a certain way about what our responsibility should be, you know, as Africans that live over here, as the image and the work and the effort that we should be putting towards Africa because how much they mimic and look up to us. And I think a lot of times we are setting such a bad example as Africans over here for Africans all over the world.
Right. You know, and you know, it's like when I first went into Africa, you never heard profanity. I mean, a whole lot of different things that you didn't hear there. I mean, when I look at how children treat their elders, their parents, you know, that they can say anything. My mother would kill me if I said darn. Here, you can use the MF word, you can BIT. I mean, what is that?
Here, when you say here.
I mean, when I say here, I'm talking about in the US. I don't hear, the only people that I hear cursing, swearing, are Africans from the diaspora. I don't hear it. Maybe they curse in their language and I don't understand what they're saying, but
You're
there is a
absolutely right, because you know when I was in Ghana, you didn't hear cursing like that. Nor did you. I never heard the N word when I was in
no.
Africa. I never heard the N word.
Well, I heard it in Ghana when somebody walked up to me and said, "Yo, my nigga, what's up?" And I was like, "Well, I know what he talked." And he called it again, "Yo, my nigga." And so I didn't even turn around. He ran up. He said, "Oh, listen, you know," I said, "And first of all, my name is not Yo, my nigga. Okay, that's number one. All right." He said, "Well, his friends from America told him that that's how you greet us." As I said,
It's pitiful,
"You
isn't it? It's just pitiful.
do you know the meaning of the word nigga?" Okay. And this was a university professor. You know. So, I
I got a
mean,
question. I got a question too, if I can.
ignorance is bliss. Let's go to Professor Ra. Then we're going to go to then we need to go to Kwabena.
Provenance.
Provenance.
Kwabena. Kwabena.
Yes.
Yeah, so Professor Ra, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to turn to you now.
Yeah. First again, welcome. Again, my sister, and your wealth of knowledge and experiences on the continent. Africa is 12 million square miles, and there are different countries throughout those 12 million square miles, and
54.
54 countries. Different languages, different customs, different ethnic groups that see the world within their own ethnicity, which is good. That's real diversity and real democracy. But what I'm saying is, when what's going on with how many of those countries are depending on foreign aid for economic development, for survival, for medicine, for care that you know about?
Too many. Okay. Too many. And that's why Ibrahim Traoré is such a threat to the West, because what he has said is that these are our natural resources. If we were getting our fair share, we wouldn't be poor. You're talking about Burkina Faso, excuse me, being one of the poorest countries on the continent. Well, you'd be poor too if you were getting 5% and the West was getting 95%. You can't help but be poor. So the brother is saying, look, we're going to take our natural resources and we're going to use those resources to take care of our people and our country. You're saying that we don't have a military. Well, they don't have uniforms. They don't have proper weaponry, all of these things. And the West continues to support groups that want to come in and destabilize the country. And then what they do is what they did, like with Obama, okay? They find a brother to send in to do the white man's work, okay?
Exactly.
His brother Franklin, whatever the hell his name is. And he is sitting in front of, well, you know, it's a room full of white folks, okay? Telling them how this young man is using the resources of Burkina Faso to better himself. Well, listen, he didn't talk about what he's done. He didn't talk about free education. He didn't talk about the hospitals that he spilled. He didn't talk about the gold refinery. He didn't talk about the factories. That is their money to help their people and their country. But because America, France, and those other Western countries that the young man has put out of his country, they pissed off, because it means that they are not going to be able to do what they have been doing in the past. That, what business is that of yours? Okay. And like I told y'all, we talked about the silence coming from African leaders with the rest of the world supporting what this young man is doing. And they are so quiet. The quiet, the silence is deafening. Where are you African leaders? Y'all scared that you might say the wrong thing and the West ain't gonna give you the aid that they've been giving you. And a lot of the aid hasn't been going to the people. So you recognize that. Mm-hmm. And same man that was president of Burkina Faso was in office for 30 years. 30 years. After he killed the brother that was there before. And these young men said, enough is enough. Stop calling the poorest country on the continent. And we sitting on hold, and y'all just taking it in and out. Okay. Even Ghana, I think that Ghana has learned something, because Ghana has now cracked down on illegal gold mining.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about, well, in Ghana, there's been a lot of investment by the Chinese. And many of them have set up their own lifestyles in Ghana. Some refuse to go back to China. They have more freedom in Africa than they would if they worked. You know, they went there to work and they don't want to go back. But what I'm asking you is, what impact has Chinese investment in Ghana? And the second question is, you know, Cheick Diop called for continental unity, developed a national language, a continental language, a military and economic system, and a lot of colonialism, neocolonialism, that's what you're talking about, prevents that from happening. And, you know, like the assassinations of Lumumba, Stephen Biko, even Nelson Mandela, certainly, was with the ANC versus C with Winnie Mandela. But getting back to my point, those are the two questions I have. What impact have Chinese investment, and are they treating the continent better, Uganda better than the West?
In enough instances, they're really not treating Ghanaians a hell of a lot better. The thing is that the Chinaman said, look, and you have to look at the government. The government of Ghana had not held these folks in check. And as the ambassador from China said, listen, how are you going? You can't be mad at me. Your government gave us permission. Y'all gave us the right to come in. You gave us arms. You said we could carry arms, okay, so that we could protect our investment. And their investment could be somebody else's farm. Okay. Right now, based on illegal mining in Ghana, waterways are so polluted, you can't do nothing with that water. You can't drink it. You can't bathe in it. And the government basically has turned its back for too many years with illegal mining. So, I mean, how mad am I going to be at the Chinese if you give them permission to be in there? Now what they're doing in Ghana is setting in motion laws governing illegal mining and putting folks out of the country. Now they have to undo the damage that has been done over the years.
One more quick question. What impact have Christianity and Islam, which to me are foreign religions to the continent, even though some would argue against that, what role are they playing in the impediments that they provide to keep Africa from developing its independence?
Well, in my opinion, Christianity has not been a good thing for Africa. Because we have taken our tradition and thrown it away. Okay, we're stuck on Jesus. Now, if Jesus is who you pray to, fine, that's on you. But the thing is that you've thrown away your tradition, like your tradition is not important. But a lot of the Christians still go to the juju man when they get out of church. They go to what works, okay? When people say that they're waiting for the rapture, I don't know what that means, okay? One of the things that they did here in Rwanda is that they closed down 600 churches. And the reason that they closed them down was because the president is saying people who can ill afford, because listen, if you're going to church and you're not tithing, that's unacceptable. You can be thrown out of the church, okay? Churches have ATM machines in the back of the church. And so the whole premise of God, okay, do you expect me to believe in a God that I cannot see? When I see God every day, when I look at you, I see God, okay? And it's not costing me, okay? So, I mean, we have plenty of churches in Africa. Christianity has really taken a toll. White folks came in and told us how to pray and who to pray for, okay? It's like we lost our minds. And until we find it, we're going to be in the same position 50 years from now.
Thank you. Let's turn to Brother Kwabena, who is doing incredible work stateside. And help us with the correct pronunciation.
It's Kwabena. Kwabena.
Kwabena, like Sister Amakusa shared, I got the name and I went to Ghana and I met her. I met her back in the 90s where I was working with the National Society of Black Engineers and we had a conference there. Sister Deidre.
Wait a minute. So you're in Nesby?
Yes.
Okay. Well, my children were in Nesby. Once again, thanks again, Kwabena. Yeah.
My children too. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Nesby is one of the biggest Pan-Africanist organizations in the world. Don't even know it.
It doesn't even know it. Doesn't even know it.
I was with my sister Salah Shabazz and Deidre Fair, and we planned that conference back in the 90s. We went to the dungeons. We went to One Africa on the coast, and I've been back a couple times and stayed in one of the shallow. How you say it?
Chalets. I call them chalets because if I told y'all were going to stay in a hut, you wouldn't want to come.
We saw the picture, so we enjoyed it. We stayed in there and got in the water. I can't think of the sister's name I was with that time. We were protesting. Went to the slave dungeons to protest when Angela Bofill, matter of fact, yesterday was her birthday. She was there and they were performing in the slave in the dungeons. Freddie Jackson was there. Freddie Jackson said, yeah, I ain't going to do it. So he didn't do it. Got a chance to talk to him. And Mike Phillips, I think, was the sax player. He jammed in one of the dungeons. But we were like, we protested in there. And where we say that was at your spot the night before we went out there.
Mike Phillips is a different guy. He's a wonderful guy.
Yes, right on. But I have a question. So when we came at that time, again, that was one of our first conferences in Africa. But ironically, I was at the last Nesby convention, which was in Chicago. And we're talking about going to Rwanda for an engineering conference coming up this fall. And I'm having some struggles with that because of the, and I, heard when I got cut off for a minute when I came back, y'all were talking about the Congo and the coltan and the resource extraction from the Congo and how the word is that it's being supported in Rwanda. And, you know, I just struggled with that a little bit about even going or participating. But how do we reconcile that? And have you seen any, you know, are you familiar with that challenge or those issues? And again, how are we going to reconcile that, especially during, as you've been talking about already, this wonderful time of Pan-Africanism with Brother Abraham Traore and the AES connection in Sahel and what have you. So just wanted to get your insight on that.
Well, you know, we listen to Western media, okay? We should be listening to African media, to those people who are on the ground. I and many of us, people are still relocating to Rwanda. We haven't had any issues actually on the ground here. Things are safe. If it wasn't, I wouldn't be here. People wouldn't be repatriating here if it wasn't safe. And I have to listen to what my government tells me here and what I see. And if we looked at one, the other issue with Congo is that part of the land that's being fought over, you know, people are saying that Kagame is responsible. And one of the things that he said was that whatever happens, we're not going to passively, you know, let it happen to us. If it means that we have to die fighting, then we die fighting. When those borders were implemented, part of Rwanda is in the Congo, the border. And that's been an issue. Unfortunately, the two presidents, and from what I understand and what I've seen, is that Kagame has really tried, you know, question, because we go back to African unity. Why is it that the king of, where was it, Morocco, I forget what non-African country, had to call two African leaders together to try to resolve their issues? What about all them other African leaders? It should have been that responsibility of those leaders to bring their brothers together. But we're like this, you know. Thank you, son. They're like this. So in terms of, I think it's safe. Most of us think it's safe. Otherwise, we wouldn't be staying here. And I've been in that business for a long time. And it's fine. I mean, they've had some issues on the border, but it has not affected Rwanda in general. So, you know, you do your research, you do your due diligence. It's still safe.
That's awesome. So if we could get a checklist, I guess, for anyone that's listening that is contemplating you know, being an expat and one of the 55 countries that you spoke about and Africa, what should that checklist be? And you've summarized them before, but I just want to make sure for those that are just now tuning in, what that should be and how should we go about that? And thank you for your question, Brother Kwamana, unless you had a follow-up question, Brother Kwamana.
No, I don't. Just it's just good to see you, Sister Amakus. And again, maybe we'll see you come fall when the conference is there. So,
Yeah. Well, I hope that you do come here and bring your conference.
Yes,
you'll be pleasantly surprised. Pleasantly.
Right on. That's awesome.
So give me your question. You mean?
Well, check. Yes, ma'am. If there was you talked about the due diligence that's necessary when looking at, and part of that due diligence, of course, is the learning the law of these different countries because things are different. And you know, I love the fact that some people are hearing for the first time in their American lives that dictatorships are not all that has been made out to be in the American machine. So we would, if there was a mini checklist that you would advise individuals that are contemplating leaving the United States for the first time, what would that list include?
Well, first of all, if you're talking about repatriation, before you just pack up and leave, I say visit the country that you're interested in. Visit. See, maybe it's really not what you think it is. That's why I said, visit me, come live with me. Know what the law is, what it is that you can and cannot do. Do you need a visa to get into the country? What are the laws? I mean, what can you can't do in most African countries the things that you do in America. So that's important to know that, whether it's and you need to know about the culture. How do we dress? Okay. How do we talk? All right. What can I do? Can you just show up and get a job? No, you can't. Okay. You come in on a visa, you definitely have to go to immigrations if you want to extend your stay. You just can't show up at a country. It's like, here I am. There are laws governing us coming into that country. What do you need medically? And depending on what country you're going in. In America, they give you a whole list of injections and medications and all the rest of that stuff that you have to take. But you don't really need all of those things. You need to talk with people who are doing what you're coming to do. Okay. You can meet a cab driver, and because he's been real nice, and he tells you that he can help you get property or whatever, and you give him your money, and then you want to know how come you don't see him again? Or he's your good friend. Okay, I had one of them. My good friend painted my green Mercedes-Benz white. Okay, and took $16,500 of my money, of our money. So it's those kind of things. And how much money do you need? Depending on what you're coming to do, are you just visiting or are you coming to do business? How much do you need to do business in the country that you're going to? Okay, very important. All right. So you need to research the countries that you want to go to. What are their pitfalls? Okay. And everybody ain't going to be happy to see you coming. All right. Because it's like here in Rwanda, people stare. That's part of their, they all stare all the time. And I have people that come and they get so upset. Why are they staring at me? Why are they looking at me like that? Because we are unique. We're different. And they know the difference. So like I say, when people stare at me, I wave at them. Hey, how you doing? You want to be able to, if you can't speak the language fluently, you need to find out what is the language. Like in Ghana, okay. We speak, they got 34 plus languages, but Cree is a language that's heard by most ethnic groups. So you need to learn a little bit about the language. How much good morning, thank you, good afternoon. Simple. Because when you can speak someone else's language, there's a different level of respect. White folks will come to Africa and learn the language fluently. And not us. Okay. The Chinaman comes, he learns the language. So we need to know, we need to be able to speak some of the language. We need to know the history of the place that we're going. Okay. And you need to buy my book.
I was getting to that. Give us the title and where we can purchase the book.
Out of the back of my car. Okay.
Is there any other better place than out of the back of the car?
That's the best place. No, the name of my book is, there you go. That's one of the books is called Ababio. And Ababio means he, I put she, because y'all ain't going over there by yourself, is that he or she who has been away and has returned. And this book, that's the second book I wrote. The first book was Returning Home Ain't Easy, but it sure is a blessing. And so what I had asked people to do, instead of my personally interviewing them, I said, look, I'm gonna give you 40 pages to explain what your return has been about, your personal experiences. I will edit it, but I won't change it. So if you wanna say ain't, if you wanna say wanna, gonna, if you want to use Ebonics, it's okay. So I got 18 interesting chapters from 18 different repatriates. Some of the stories are sad, okay. Others, people use poetry, they use diary entries. They had a list of recommendations and suggestions for people who wanted to escape from America. My book, Returning Home Ain't Easy, chronicles some of the experiences that I had, the people that I met, the challenges. It makes people laugh, I understand. It makes them cry. It pisses them off. It evokes a lot of emotions. And like I was saying to the brother, when these women showed up at my house one night at 9:30, and when my husband answered the door, they wanted to know, is this the home of Sister Imacus? He said, yes. And then when I came to the door, before they even said good evening, the sister said, where's that nigga that stole your money? These folks came from America, so you know how we are coming up out of the hood, all right? They were pissed off. She said, I read that book. I said, as soon as I get there, I'm gonna go see if I find that nigga that stole your money. I said, thank you. I said, thank you very much. Okay, listen, he stole my money, but he didn't run away. He stayed in town. He's still there. Okay. So if you want, as what folks, and generally what I do is that I ask people who have read the book to send me their comments. Okay. And yeah, they tell me it makes them cry, pisses them off. I said, well, listen, that's good. Okay. And have left America. And not only moved to Ghana, but have moved to other African countries. They say the book tells them that it's possible. You just have to want to, you know? So I hope I've been able to answer your questions. And you can always feel free to call me.
Absolutely. Know? Are you on any social media platforms that we may follow you on?
I think this, I am Facebook. I'm the worst Facebooker in the world. Okay. Instagram, they're trying to pull me in. I think, yeah, I have an Instagram. And I'm doing podcasts.
Good. Where can we find you on Instagram?
Mama One Africa.
Awesome.
I think that's how I'm on there. And One Africa on Facebook.
Okay.
So I've really promised to be a little bit more active on social media.
Well, we understand that's part of the charge that you were given by the ancestors, and you are doing it, and we are glad about it. The ancestors don't make any mistakes, and they knew who to get for this particular job. And we can't thank you enough for sharing your insight, wisdom, and energy here today. You have been more than motivational. It's just been enlightenment, and to be in community with you has been refreshing for me. And I hope it is for the others that are here. Brother Rob, do you have anything you need to add at this point? Rashika?
Well, I'm just very thankful for Dr. Sherita for linking me to Mama One Africa. When I heard her for about 10 minutes and I was sold. So I'm in awe of her and all of the participation we had with her today. And I just want to thank everybody for coming out. It's a beautiful thing.
Thank you.
Well,
I think we've experienced an embarrassment of riches today. And once again, the ancestors are undefeated. Thank you so much.
all the time. I thank you very much for having me on. And I've had a couple of reconnections with folks that have visited One Africa, and I have to thank them. You know, people have come and brought their people and insisted that they go to One Africa. Right now, One Africa is up for sale. I can't do it any longer, you know. And so I've had some disappointments with people that I've trusted explicitly. And, you know, given opportunities to be able to have a business. And, but you know how we get sometimes. Greed clouds our vision. And so, person that I had put in charge of One Africa did not do justice at all. So I decided that I'm selling it. I won't sell to the Chinese. I won't sell to white folks. I won't sell to Indians, okay? That stretch of land between the Cape Coast dungeons and the Ilmina Castle dungeons and beyond is historic. We have actually returned to the scene of the crime. And all along that coast, most of that land has been taken over by diasporan Africans. And that's significant. All of those folks owned that property. And so the ancestors have really been good to me. And if it goes to anybody other than one of us, they can't be mad at me because I've tried to get us, and people have come. But you know, there's been a lot of interest, but interest with no money. It takes money and it takes boots on the ground. If you want to do that, you have to be there. Okay. So what can I say?
Absolutely. And hopefully the individual will be able to find more information about that at one of the, or at least have a lead in from one of the social media outlets that we spoke about. If you're serious inquiries only, because interest with no money is a hobby, and this is business.
Exactly. So, I mean, and they can call me directly or they can get in touch with the person that's handling my business, and we'll take it from there.
All right.
Okay.
That sounds great.
Yeah. Well, it's been my pleasure.
It's been our pleasure.
Likewise.
Brother Rashid, is
it? Now that I know the Community Education Network, then I just have to tune in sometime.
We'd love to have you around. I'll keep you updated.
Thank you very much. And when you finish reading the book, I would like your comments. I'd like to know what you thought.
We'll do that.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to take our pause.
Okay.
Each one teach one, conscious corner, and the level set. We will do this again as soon as we can. Everybody continue to have a great and wonderful day.
Yes, you too. Thank you so very much. Peace.
Peace.
Love. Happiness.